Hello, very good evening to you. It's 6 o'clock in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean. I'm Gredston Seely, and at 6 o'clock, everybody knows it's time for the Better Health Radio Show. And as per usual, we've got the good host, the good doctor, Dr. Renee Boyce, and as usual as well, she'll have her guest to introduce to you. But first, let's make contact to the good doctor. Good evening, Doc. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening, Gredston. How are you?
I am not too bad at all. Long time no hear, and now no see, because I can see you.
It has been a long time. It's good to hear you, and it's good to see you as well. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. This evening, I have with me someone who is no stranger to the program, and we are going to be discussing something that has become sort of a problem in our community, but we'll get there in the end. But let's say good evening to Dr. John Barker. Hi, John.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty okay. Let me just make sure you're hearing me clearly. Nice, good level.
Yes, please. Yes, please. Yes,
okay. For those of you who don't know, the number to call into the studio, 434-1790. And if you want to send Gregston the WhatsApp, 266-4862. So those numbers, once again, 434-1790, and for the WhatsApp, 266-4862. Dr. John Barker is a UK-trained obstetrician gynecologist, and I will always tell the story of him as my registrar. Never missing lunch. You know, people will be there working through. Dr. Barker's like, time for lunch. Have me excused. Go and get his lunch and come back. And
only for 10 minutes.
Well, yeah, don't let me make it seem as though he was gone for hours and not back. This evening we want to talk about something that's a concern to women who are pregnant. We're going to be talking about bleeding in pregnancy, and then we'll get on to our topic of discussion a little later on towards the end. So I firmly believe that in order to understand any problem, that we should start at the beginning. So let us talk in simple terms. How does pregnancy occur? Simple terms, John.
Pregnancy occurs where two people have to be intimately involved is the traditional route. The untraditional route is if you can't get pregnant through IVF or in vitro fertilization, of which there are different subsets. But essentially, sperm and egg, they join, and then they form some cells, which then further divide and differentiate, then to form the embryo. And then as it develops, then you get the fetus. And then, hopefully and eventually, you'll get a term baby.
Okay, one of the things that had always puzzled me in medical school was the definition of term. And I think I remember term being greater than 37 completed weeks.
Yeah, 37 weeks. Yeah, once you get 37 weeks, then that's
term. That's a term. That's a term, yeah. And term meaning that the baby is fully developed and all should be well.
All should be well, yeah.
Okay, so another question that there's a call.
Yeah, I believe we do have a call. Interrupting you, Doc. Let's see if we can ascertain what.
We haven't even started.
Yeah, wow. Really. So let's see if they're still there. Good evening. Like, almost had lyrical interpretations. Good evening. Better Health Radio Show. Hello? Well, they seem to have disappeared. Carry on smartly, Doc.
So my question was going to be, why do periods stop once a woman has become pregnant? Because we're getting to bleeding in pregnancy. So why do periods stop?
Yeah, the periods stop because after the egg gets implanted, we get the progesterone being produced, or we call it corpus luteum. And then as a result, you don't get any periods or anything like that. So the progesterone, what it does is to essentially increase the length of the womb to make it free from the egg get implanted.
So it's because of one of the hormones that's produced during pregnancy that after the fetus has implanted, the embryo has implanted, that women no longer get their periods. So we have two calls. We're going to take those calls.
Go right ahead, Doc.
Good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Dr. Boyce. I am hearing the other doctor very clearly, and you sound like you're under a rock somewhere really far off. I don't know what's happening with your mic.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for telling me that. I am really far. let's see. Try to adjust here. Turn my mic up. Okay, is that any different? Has there been any
impact? Yeah, I can hear you louder.
Okay. I hope that the callers, well, let's take the second call and we'll ask the caller if he or she can hear any clearly.
That one is gone. Clearly. You can carry on.
Okay. My apologies, ladies and gentlemen, but like the lady alluded to, I am very far. So maybe that's the issue. So we've discovered that we are pregnant now, and everybody is happy, and we are looking forward in about 37 weeks to a bouncing baby boy or girl or girls. But then, let's just say a scenario, the lady goes to the bathroom and she notices blood on wiping. And yes, we now have bleeding in pregnancy. So how do we classify or how do we group bleeding in pregnancy?
Right. Now, when you're earlier on, is more gynecological. And then as you pass first, second trimester, is more obstetric causes of bleeding. So essentially, if you're not recently pregnant, and if you get a little bit of bleeding, the first thing you should do is consult your doctor. Ideally, the way how the system is here is you're going to see a GP or you're going to accident and emergency facility, either at the hospital or otherwise. And the most important, and thirdly, the gynecologist. But I'll get to that in a second. Now, once you go and get seen by a doctor, the main thing is to see a doctor, once you see a doctor, then you do the pregnancy test. And then once you get the pregnancy test done, the next important thing is to do an ultrasound scan. Now, when we do an ultrasound scan, you have to be cognizant, or you have to realize that we wouldn't necessarily be able to see anything in terms of inside the womb at around 5 weeks and 3 days. So when we do the scan, we're not necessarily going to see anything if it's a very early pregnancy. If we do the ultrasound, if you do the ultrasound and we don't see anything, then we got to do a blood test in pregnancy called the beta ACG.
Right, we'll take this call and we'll get right back to talking with Dr. Barker. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. Before you say anything, I'm just going to ask, are you hearing me clearly?
No.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead with your question.
Caller, the doc can hear you. Go ahead with your question, please.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Just go ahead, caller. They can hear you. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, please. We can hear you. Go right ahead, please.
Okay, well,
we seem to be having trouble with that line, so we can try to ask them to call back if they possibly can, because I can hear her. She's probably having a difficulty hearing us. But go ahead, Doc.
So, John, you were just telling us about probably not seeing anything in the uterus on ultrasound in 5 weeks, 3 days?
Right. So if we don't see anything, and we if it's an early gestation, so we go by your last menstrual period. So in the history, we go by your last menstrual period, and then based on that, you have an estimation of how much weeks are supposed to be. So if, for argument's sake, you see somebody who's less than 5 weeks, you can tell them that they got a good chance that you may not see anything. So if you scan them, and you don't see anything, then clinically it will be it will correlate with your history. So then the next thing you have to do to verify it would be to do a blood test called a beta HCG, and that's a blood test of the hormone in pregnancy. And ideally, it should increase by at least 66% or double every 48 hours. So if you know that it's low, then we do it every 48 hours. The threshold is 1500. So if, for argument's sake, we do an ultrasound, don't do anything, don't see anything, and the value of the hormone in pregnancy is 1500, then we have to be thinking other things. Either is it an early pregnancy or is it a life-threatening situation, which would be an ectopic pregnancy.
So ectopic pregnancy we'll discuss after we take this call.
Yes.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, go ahead with your query, ma'am. We can hear you.
Question?
Yes, please. We can hear you. Go right ahead.
You can hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm calling on behalf. This number is the only number that I can get with the RB, right?
Which number did you call? 434?
417-1790.
Or 91.
Pardon me?
Or 91, 434-1790, or 434-1791.
Yes.
So if the 90 is giving you trouble, you can try the 91.
Yes. I mean, like, in the daytime, when I try to get Larry.
Oh, the daytime. Well, yes, this is the same number you call to get Larry, but if you want to speak to him off here, you can go through the PBX, which is 430-7300.
Yeah.
You have a question? Yeah, yep. Oh, okay. All right. Wonderful. You have a good evening.
I miss your voice, though.
Thank you.
I only hear you on Tuesday.
Ken.
Get in trouble on these.
Yes, Ken and Lyrical Interpretations. Correct. Yes.
Yes.
All right.
So all the best.
Likewise to you, Mama. Thanks again, huh?
Okay.
All right. Take care. All right, Doc. Back over to you.
We were just about to discuss ectopic pregnancies. What's an ectopic pregnancy, John?
Right, the ectopic pregnancy is where pregnancy is found or implants in any other area besides the inside of the womb. So more than likely, it implants in the fallopian tubes or in the ovary, or it can be in the cervix or in the abdomen. Yeah, it's potentially life-threatening because the tubes cannot accommodate the developing pregnancy. And as a result, when the tube ruptures, it can either get a slow leaking ectopic, or it can get torrential bleeding, which could be life-threatening. And usually, people that would have been predisposed to a higher risk of ectopic pregnancy would be any person that who would have had like a tubal infection, like pelvic inflammatory disease, whereby the tubes would have been distorted. And they will be at increased risk for ectopic pregnancy, or if by the history, if you had a previous ectopic pregnancy, then you would be at risk for a second ectopic pregnancy if you get pregnant. So the main thing to rule out if you bleed is an ectopic pregnancy. If, however, you do the scan and you see a intrauterine pregnancy, then the diagnosis will be what you call a threatened miscarriage. What we usually do is if you have a bleed patient and we do an ultrasound scan and see an intrauterine pregnancy with a viable heartbeat, then the probability of you keeping the pregnancy is over 95%. Now, on the flip side, if we do the scan, don't see a pregnancy, but the beta HCG or the hormone test in pregnancy is increasing, then what we have is a pregnancy of unknown location, meaning that you are pregnant, but we don't know exactly where it is.
So that goes back to ectopic again?
Well, right. So we try to make sure that it isn't an ectopic pregnancy, because in some pregnancies, they don't follow the normal route. So as long as we see the values going up, and if once you get to the 1500, and we don't see anything, then we got to think of, is it possibly an ectopic? And that's where sometimes we have to take people to theater to put basically keyhole surgery, a diagnostic laparoscopy, to see exactly if it is in the tube or not.
Okay, and I remember that there was also another condition, hydatidiform mole, that caused
allegations. Yes, so that is a rare cause of, that's a rare thing in pregnancy. So essentially what it is an abnormal pregnancy, and usually it's due to a genetic thing whereby you get one egg being fertilized by two sperm and stuff. But essentially, yes, you can get very high values there, but it's also rare, and you only know it on, but you can get ultrasound features of it, what we call a North Star pattern. But most of the time, if for mistake you miscarry, once we send the tissue to the lab will then verify it. Very rarely it can continue. and you can get what you call choriocarcinoma, which is a form of cancer, and that has to be followed up with in UK we send them to cancer centers, but locally you might have to get chemotherapy for it.
Okay, and whilst we are having this discussion, we by no means are trying to be cruel and unkind to those persons who have gone through the difficulty of a miscarriage. No. Because
yes,
to have hoped for a baby and to have lost a baby cannot be, I don't think there's anybody except somebody who's gone through that who can understand.
Would understand. Yeah,
So this evening's show is about helping people to be aware about the signs of miscarriage. It's helping people to pay more attention to antenatal care, because one of the concerning things is that persons are still waiting too late in pregnancy to seek antenatal care.
Yes.
And it shouldn't be. That really should not be the case. I wanted to ask you a question. Earlier you had said that... Yes. We divide it into gynecological and obstetric, meaning based on the age of the pregnancy. So we've discussed the gynecological causes. It could be a threatened miscarriage. It could be an ectopic pregnancy. Let's move on a little bit to the possible obstetric causes of bleeding now.
Okay. When we see a lady who's in advanced pregnancy, usually how we approach it is by history, examination, and investigation. But in terms of the history, what we look for is the more life-threatening or acute obstetric emergencies. Yeah. So for argument's sake, what we would do from the history is ask if when you get the bleeding, how much bleeding is it? Once we get an idea of how much bleeding is it, we want to know if it's painful bleeding. Now, if you are getting painful, heavy bleeding, and you are in advanced pregnancy, then the life-threatening cause, which we have to rule out, is what we call an abruption, placental abruption. And essentially what that is where the placenta is separated from the womb, and you can either, in the case whereby you have a lot of blood and pain, then it's a revealed abruption. Sometimes you might be in a lot of pain, but there's no blood. And that's a concealed abruption. And that's the most dangerous one, because we are not sure how much blood you have lost, because it's all hidden inside the womb. And you gotta remember that the womb can expand a bit as well too. So those are the most important life-threatening forms of bleeding. The other form of bleeding that can be potentially life-threatening would be placenta previa, whereby the placenta is implanted in the lower segment of the uterus. So essentially, traditionally, most patients will present with painless, like spotting or bleeding, which gets progressively worse. And then at the end, you get like this torrential bleed, and that can become life-threatening. Those patients are usually delivered by a cesarean section, and they will be at higher risk for like hysterectomy and stuff because of the potential for massive blood loss, which could become infected. So those are the most important causes to rule out first. The other causes would be simple causes, like if you get like bleeding after sex, then those are most likely due to trauma, or sometimes you can have an ectropion, which is some very soft cells which are formed on the inside of the cervix, which actually come to the outside. So as they're having intercourse, because the cells are very soft and fragile, you get bleeding from that, and you can get local trauma to the vagina stuff. Sometimes women will come in with they pass water and they wipe to see blood, but those are could be due to like a blood infection as well.
So there are many causes for bleeding.
Are many causes. Yes,
I think one thing I have learned about blood is that it's one of those fluids that's supposed to be internal,
yes,
except for a female who is having a
baby. Yes, yes, please.
If for whatever reason you see blood coming from your nose, your ears, your bottom, or any other orifice in your body, male or female, that is reason to call or go and see your doctor. Blood is internal. That's not a very scientific way of saying it, but blood is not one of those things that should be seen outside of menstruation or delivery for whatever reason. Can you think of any medical causes, John, where some person, where you should be seeing blood?
In terms of, no, I didn't get the question from here.
Oh, right. Can you think of any medical conditions outside of menstruation and delivery that blood should be seen? I can't think of any.
No, I can't think of any. Yeah.
Normally, if there's anybody out there who's listening, and we're not being facetious or joking around, honestly, if there's anybody, any of our colleagues who can think of a condition where seeing blood is normal, then give us a call in the studio, 434-1790 or 266-4862. If you have just joined us, we are this evening talking to Dr. John Barker about the causes of bleeding in pregnancy. And just for a quick recap, we divided it into gynecological or early bleeding in pregnancy, or bleeding in early pregnancy, and obstetric. So obstetric would be the ones who would be dealing with delivery. Obstetricians would be the ones dealing with advanced pregnancy, and gynecologists would be the ones dealing with earlier pregnancies. So that's right. So, and that distinguishes where, like for our hospital system, for example, those persons with gynecological pregnancy problems would tend to go to B4, as opposed to those with obstetric complaints that might tend to go to B2. Just to allow persons to get an idea of the difference between the two.
Yes, please. And in terms of what we call the develop. Try to improve the services. Like in some of the bigger tertiary hospitals that I worked at in the UK, there are actual gynecological emergency rooms, like how you have an accident emergency room, and early pregnancy assessment units. So essentially, in the gynecological emergency room, any female with symptoms in terms of down below, any issues, rather than going to the ENE or the GP and stuff, they can come straight to the gynecological emergency room, where they will see a experienced or a specialist gynecologist, and that actually frees up the system. And in addition to that, with the early pregnancy problems, rather than going through the system, there's a separate gynecological entity that actually sees people with early pregnancy problems and scans them and stuff and follows them up. So it actually bypasses the rest of the hospital, so it makes the journey or the patient experience much better. So that's what I'm trying to develop in relation to patient experience, in relation to if they have a gynecological emergency or if they have any issues with bleeding as well.
Let me ask you a question about ultrasounds in pregnancy. A couple years ago, I was in a forum where we were discussing what were the basic necessities of pregnancy. And someone had said that an ultrasound was one of the investigations that was absolutely one of the basic investigations in pregnancy.
Yes.
That was a few years ago. Let's think about the countries who are a little far out. Countries like in Africa and so on, where the access to medical care, ultrasounds and so on, is not that good.
Yes.
So if a lady who's pregnant in that sort of setting cannot get an ultrasound, is it still listed as being an absolutely necessary early pregnancy investigation? If you see what I mean,
yes. In terms of equity. Yes. In terms of completeness of care, I mean, like, if you have a complete miscarriage, or if you have an incomplete miscarriage, whereby
not in terms of miscarriage. No, this is
in terms of pregnancy.
Antenatal assessment. Yes.
Right. No. If you don't have an ultrasound, in terms for, because it's what we call basic essential health care. So the problem is that if you don't have an ultrasound, the issues would be dating the pregnancy correctly. The second thing will be checking for anatomical problems, like any heart defects or any limb defects. So essentially you're working blindly, and then well, you want to know the sex of the baby, you want to know where the placenta is, and the problem is that if you have a afterbirth that is lower down, and when you come in, you could come in a life-threatening situation. So having an ultrasound kind of, well, it does circumvent all the problems that I just listed, but it is essential. But it's just that in those conditions, you're working in the blind, so you have to work with what you have. So unfortunately, those areas will have higher maternal morbidity and mortality.
Right, yeah. and the reason why I mentioned this again, it goes back to what I had said earlier in terms of seeking antenatal care. There's some simple things that can be done so that you can, so that the person who's pregnant and those who are supporting her can do in terms of making sure you take your right vitamins. If you're on certain medications, then your medications may have to be changed. If you are in a high-risk category, maybe you aren't supposed to be managed on the outside. Maybe you have to go directly into the hospital. Mm-hmm. If you had losses in pregnancy before, then you are at risk again for loss in pregnancy.
For another one. Correct.
Yes. So.
Correct.
The purpose of that thing about the ultrasound is about getting your care as early as possible.
Yes.
I know that there are some people who go all the way down to almost term and not even know that they're pregnant, or I've heard. Is that possible?
I'll come to that in a second. The ultrasound is essential, right? So you need at least three ultrasounds in your pregnancy, a minimum of three, right? That would be a viability scan to make sure you're pregnant.
How many weeks?
Well, anytime before 7 weeks. So if you're pregnant, say like 6, 7, 8 weeks, as long as we scan you and have a pregnancy, that is fine, right? So we know that you have a viable intrauterine pregnancy. The next scan should be at around 12 weeks, which is a dating scan. And your dating scan is important in working out your due date, because you know you go by your last menstrual period and work out your due date. But when we do the dating scan, we work your due date from that. And the reason for doing that is to decrease the amount of post-term pregnancies and stuff. Because sometimes if you're unsure your dates, then you go by the dating scan. Yeah? And then the next scan would be your anatomy scan, and that checks for the abnormalities. In relation to the other question that you were saying, some people would say that they didn't know that they were pregnant, but if you're coming in advanced gestation, it's hard to believe, because you would feel fluttering, you would feel baby moving, kicking and stuff, and it couldn't be gas, it would be tummy problems or diarrhea or anything. And if you've been bleeding every month, right, and if you've been bleeding every month, that means that you have a serious problem, because you will be bleeding, you will have recurrent bleeding in pregnancy, which should be an issue. So you have to take it with a pinch of salt.
Mm-hmm. Pinch of salt. Yeah. We have a call, Gregson.
Yes, I do believe you have a call. Let's see if you're on the line. Good evening.
Good evening, Gregson, to you and the two goodly doctors.
Yes, please. Go right ahead. They can hear you.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Now, I know you all, Stephen, are discussing gynecological and obstetrics, but I want to ask a question that is separate and distinct from anything that you all are discussing. They wanted to ask this question nearly a year now, and each time the program come on, I'm so caught up in what is being discussed that I usually forget. But this evening, it came right back to me, so I decided I'm going to ask it this evening. Now, there's a disease, I'm not exactly sure what it name, but it's one where the person don't have any feelings, absolutely no feelings, and to the point where that person could go and stand in a fire and don't feel anything. I think they say that there are only about 5 or 6 people in the world with that kind of disease. 1 in America, 2 in India, and 2 in Latin America. I want you guys to tell me what is that disease, if it is a disease or a condition, exactly what it is, because I heard it being discussed already, and I would like to know a little bit more about it.
Well, what I can tell you, sir, is that I am not aware of that disease, and so I wouldn't be able to speak on something about which I know I don't know anything. I can research it for you.
Yes,
and that on our next show.
That would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, I can do that for you.
That would be greatly appreciated, because I heard it being discussed already on BBC, and there are five such people in the world with it. One in America, two in India, and two in Latin America. And it's a disease where they say that these people always have to have someone around them. Because you can fall down and sit and break your two legs and get up and try to walk, not knowing that your legs are broken, because you don't feel anything, any pain, anything. So I thought I will listen to you next week to see if you can enlighten us about it.
All right. Thank you so much, caller.
No problem. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Doc, I think we have another call on the line. Let's see if they're still there. Good evening, Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening.
Yes, please. Go right ahead. The doctors can hear you.
I have three questions. I would like to find out what causes a person to have a miscarriage at 3 months.
All right. Well, you hold on. That's one question. Give them a chance to finish to answer them individually as you go along. That's the first question.
Okay.
Doctor.
Okay.
Right. The If you deliver at 12 weeks, you got a number of causes. The most common cause for miscarriage before 12 weeks would be like if you have any problem with your genes and stuff. So for argument's sake, if you have any chromosomal abnormalities, which would be like Down syndrome and stuff, you'll be at increased risk for miscarriage. If you have like uncontrolled kidney disease or uncontrolled diabetes, you would also be at increased risk for miscarriage. Or if the fetus has severe abnormalities that incompatible with life, then you would get miscarriages as well before 12 weeks.
All right, that's the first question. Did you hear the reply?
Yes, my first question said, is about having diabetes?
No, no. He was giving three options that can satisfy the answer to your question, and diabetes was the second one, I think, that you can lose
but
the baby.
What I'm saying is, I know when I was a young girl, about 20, I got pregnant, and I didn't attend a doctor, but plain so at 3 months, I just had bleeding, right? Then I remembered when I was pregnant again, at 5 months, plain so I had bleeding and the baby came up, right? 5 months.
Okay.
And then another time I was carrying a baby, but the other ones I didn't tell a doctor. I didn't have any bad pain, nothing was wrong with me. So the next one, I was carrying a baby, I went to a doctor and I told him what my experiences were. And he said, he will have to give me some injections to hold it. I had the injections, and when I reached 6 months, he said, you're at 6 months now. I don't think you will get a problem. And guess what? 2 weeks after he stopped the injections, had water break, out came baby.
Yeah. All right. So essentially what you're describing there is two things. Now, a small subset of patients will have something called what we call antiphospholipid syndrome, which is an issue with clotting and stuff. So as the baby develops, you get like these small clots. So as a result of that, that increases the risk of miscarriage. So to circumvent that, we give you medication that would thin the blood. So we give you Flexin, and studies have shown that if you use Flexin and aspirin, that would increase your chances for having a life. Yeah, and the earlier you start it, the better. Now, what you describing in terms of losses at 20 weeks and stuff, is more second and third trimester losses, so more than likely you would have an element of antiphospholipid and what we call spiking complex. Your body and your bone is weak, so as a result, it dilates, so you don't get any pain or anything, and then you just get like pressure water, or sometimes you just get a little deep, and then when you put the spectrum in, neck the bone is quite dilated. So it is possible from what you're telling me that you could have two of those conditions, but that would be a subset of patients that would be very difficult to treat in terms of getting towards return pregnancy.
Yeah, at the time now, this was when I was in my 20s, When I was 39 now, I got pregnant. I went to a doctor. I explained my past experiences. And about 4 months, I didn't even realize I was pregnant until about 4 months. And then he said, well, he had to put some sutures into the uterus to hold it.
In the cervix, and, yes, please. So that is a vital stage, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that went very well. At 9 months, early before my delivery, I had the sutures taken out. And I had the baby then, but I had it by forceps. I had to have a forceps delivery, right?
Yes, please.
And up to 10 months after the baby came, 10 months after, the uterus did not go back in place. I had to have a vaginal hysterectomy. So what causes these problems?
Right, so we went through them. We went the causes before. So in terms of the miscarriage, if you're having recurrent miscarriages, if you're having more than three miscarriages and stuff, you got to make sure that you don't have any medical underlying problems for it. Usually those would be like the antiphospholipid syndrome that I was telling you about, that you need to go on the blood thinners and aspirin for. You got to make sure you don't have any renal or diabetes, some control. Sometimes, I'm not sure if you do it here, but if for argument's sake you have like repeated miscarriages, and once you get tissue for the baby, you can send it and get it examined to see if there is a chromosomal problem for the actual miscarriages. In relation to putting in a stitch, you have to have evidence of mid-trimester losses or return delivery. And depending on if you have one or both, then the evidence is to put in the stitch. Suture, as you call it, which means like a cervical, or we can do serial cervical length ultrasounds. This is from 12 weeks, and we're every 2 weeks or less, depending on the patient, because more than likely the patients are very anxious to see if there's shortening of the cervix or if there's what we call funneling, where normally the cervix is like a closed, like a cylinder, but it's like like a sandwich. You know how you push the sandwich together, how it's close? Right? If you get funnily, the top of the sandwich opens up, so it looks like a funnel that you pour stuff in, and that is a sign that is vital incompetence, so you need to get a stitch. Yeah? So these are the things that we try to do to try and make you carry a pregnancy as long as possible. But if you have both problems, then it's very difficult. And I need specialized care to actually try and get it through. Because from what you're telling me, you had from the injections and stuff that you're getting and the suture, you had two underlying problems, which would be very difficult to treat in order for you to carry a pregnancy to term.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, caller.
No problem.
Those are some very interesting questions. Very interesting questions. Yeah, thank you so much for calling. I wanted to ask you to take us through the journey of what happens after we've determined, because we talk about threatened miscarriage, which means that there is the possibility that the pregnancy might be lost.
Yes.
Let's talk about the other one is called incomplete and complete miscarriage.
Yes, please.
What's the difference between those two?
Right, the incomplete miscarriage is whereby you're going to miscarry, and when we examine you clinically, well, from the history, I'll start from the history, the patient will usually come in with pain and bleeding. So when we do a clinical examination, the neck of the womb would be open, and you can see tissue coming out through the neck of the womb. Yeah? When we do the ultrasound scan, the cervix will be dilated on scan. In addition to this, we do an internal scan, which is the transvaginal scan. And then what we will see would be dependent. We can see like a lot of what we call products of conception in the womb, which means it would have passed majority of stuff, but then it will still have some tissue inside. So this would be what you call an incomplete miscarriage. Now, the treatment of that could either be A, conservative, whereby you can pass everything. Two, we can give them medication called misoprostol or Sedaconda, which will help speed up the process. Or the third option would be doing what we call a DNC, but we don't do a DNC as such. We do what we call a suction cure attach, because suction cure attach whereby instead of the traditional, which would be DNC way of script removal, to remove everything, you do everything on the suction. So you get less of a loss with that, and you get less infection with that as well. Sometimes if you do a DNC, that could predispose you to what a condition called adenomyosis as well. Yeah? So, and then...
Yeah, just making sure that we get it. The difference between the two, as the name suggests, complete means that all the products, so the fetus, the
have come out. Yeah, everything has passed out. Everything passed out. Yeah. And clinically, when you examine the patient, the neck of the womb is closed. And when you scan, when you do an internal scan, there's nothing in the womb. Yeah. Now, once you diagnose it, every female is different. But you suggest if they have any issues in terms of psychological issues, that to contact you so you can give them psychological counseling. And the reason why this is so, why I offer it, is because some women think they have failed because they don't know the journeys that other women go through. And then you have to offer it because some women take it harder. Some women think that they failed every person, everybody. Think they feel themselves as well too, and they actually go through a very traumatic grieving process. So in terms of psychology, the psychological aspect of it becomes very important, and it's very important to realize this from the early. But some people you can know straight off the bat. Some people you have to tell them about if you have issues, because everybody will be fine then, but then in another 24 hours they might have regret and stuff. So then you offer them the services.
I agree with you completely. Everybody's journey is different, and sometimes even when you go through a traumatic event, you're so numb. Some persons have said that they're numb, and you know, I'm okay. I'm all right. Yeah. I just need maybe a few days home to manage the pain or to make sure the bleeding stops. But we have seen in our careers that some persons really do have a difficult time trying to recover from the loss.
Yeah.
Do you have to continue doing blood tests after you've had a complete miscarriage, or once you've done the scan and everything is gone, then that's it in terms of medical and surgical management?
If you're having like a miscarriage or anything like that, and you think you pass everything, as a precaution, I tell everybody do a repeat pregnancy test in 2 weeks. Because for argument's sake, if you had it incomplete, you give medication and you pass everything, sometimes it might leave back a little bit of tissue inside that can be producing the hormone. So usually, as a precaution, I would tell most people to repeat a pregnancy test in 2 weeks. If it is positive still, then I would tell them to come in, scan them, and then repeat the hormone test to see exactly what the level is.
In your answering the questions before, you mentioned a drug, Cytotec.
Misoprostol. Yeah.
Misoprostol. Let's use the chemical name. Misoprostol. Okay. So my first question for you, Dr. Barker, how was this drug obtained?
Right. Well, let me go into the history of the drug. The original history was that it was used for ulcers, yeah? And what they found was that if pregnant people used it, they would miscarry. So then they had stopped using it for the ulcers, but then gynecology took it over for like gynecological issues. So ideally, they are supposed to be prescribed by the doctor in relation to... Because the main use is for treatment of miscarriage or medical termination of pregnancy. And the third use is in massive postpartum hemorrhage.
Okay, so let us categorically state, neither of us is a lawyer.
No.
What we are discussing is medical bleeding in pregnancy and a worrisome trend which has become a little too, a little too commonplace there are certain drugs which, like Dr. Barker just said, which require a prescription, which means that a doctor must write the drug, how it should be taken, for how long it should be taken, sign and stamp, and then it should be given to a pharmacist who prescribes the drug. And the pharmacist would go over the use of the drug, how it's to be taken, and advise if any side effects, so on and so forth. So as a general practitioner, this is the scenario that I get. A person comes in and their complaint is they were bleeding. My next question would be, bleeding from where? Bleeding from the vagina. Okay. And they usually say bleeding from down there. They don't usually say vagina. Bleeding from down there. How long have you been bleeding? So you get various lengths of time. 3 days. Okay. When was your last period? They give a date. As far as you know, could you be pregnant? And then you get a long silence. And after that, and you keep taking the history, you discover that, and the story usually is, I got some tablets to take, 2 to take by mouth and 2 to put inside. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this.
Yes. All right. Essentially,
Yeah, you want to take this call just before we discuss this.
Yeah, well.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Hi, good evening. I recently had a relative who died from cancer treat. Do you think I could go and get a test free if I can the treat as well?
I didn't hear the question.
Yeah, I didn't hear either.
Caller, could you repeat for the doctors, please?
I'm saying that I recently had a relative who died from sickle cell trait. I want to know if I should go and get tested to see if I'm carrying the trait as well.
Yeah, it's best to get tested. It's best to get tested. So at least you know for sure. Okay. When in doubt, test.
All right. Thank you very much.
No problem there.
Thank you kindly, caller.
So you were about to answer, Dr. Barker, discussing misoprostol and its uses in pregnancy, and its over the table and under the table uses in pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for example, before a patient actually takes his medication, they should have an ultrasound scan done first to make sure that is an intrauterine pregnancy first, because as the causes for bleeding that we went through, you can have an ectopic pregnancy. So if you take this medication, you will bleed, but it doesn't treat the ectopic pregnancy. So you can go along for 2-3 weeks and then think you're fine and then end up in hospital because you were pregnant, yes, but the pregnancy was not in the womb, it was in the tube, right? So that's the danger in actually taking it without doing a scan. Yeah. The next thing is that if you're going to take it, and ideally, you should have a scan. 2, you should have follow-up. And 3, you should have a repeat scan to make sure everything is out. Because if you just take it, one of the risks is that you can take it and then it doesn't do anything. So you're just as you were from before.
Which
is pregnant, and you would only know that if it has worked after you do the scan, because it can have products of conception and stuff inside the womb itself.
What are the complications of having products of conception still in the womb?
Right. You can have bleeding, you can get an infection, sometimes it can become septic, we have what we call blood poisoning, and very rarely you can die from that. I mean, you don't see it now in this day and age. But excuse me, you can be seriously ill. You can go to intensive care if you have a serious infection, because you gotta remember that most people might not come to the doctor early, and in sepsis, the earlier you get your antibiotics, the better off you are, and the quicker you recover.
So, in your estimation, getting these tablets and taking them, and I'm not putting you on the spot personally, but medically,
no, that's fine. Yeah.
It is not safe, or is it safe for some person to just go to a pharmacy and purchase these, what we call abortifacients, allowing termination, tablets that allow pregnancy to end, that it's not safe to be done that way?
No, it's not safe, and it's not good practice. For example, well, it may be different to most people, but in UK Eritrean, there are services set up for that, and they go through a different pathway. But essentially, if you're going to get those pills, you have to be seen, you have to have an ultrasound scan, and then you get the tablets. Usually, you're staying for them, or recently, the guidelines have shifted to say that if the option is to do it at home. But in relation to the pre-insertion, you need an ultrasound scan to make sure you have a viable intrauterine pregnancy before you even think about doing anything. And I've seen complications arise whereby you get ectopic pregnancies from it. Sometimes you might tell the patient they need to scan or repeat the pregnancy test. They don't do it. And then the procedure fails, and it is about 2 in 1,000. But then you would hear that the doctor didn't do what they had to do, but actually the patient didn't take the responsibility. So there's a lot of ethical issues involved, and there's a lot of follow-up issues, and there's a lot of procedural issues that have to be ironed out in relation to the procedure.
Right, so we are not discussing here whether or not a woman has a right to terminate a pregnancy. What we're trying to emphasize is that we wish that persons are safe. Dr. Barker just listed the complications, and none of the complications was something that anybody would want for herself.
For nobody.
The possibility of bleeding to death, the possibility of serious infections, the possibility of, what was the other one you said? Sepsis. Ectopic pregnancy, failed termination. So you wanted to end the pregnancy, but you still end up being pregnant because it did not work. Right. So
they need like follow up and stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Follow up care is absolutely necessary. So the advice that we really do want to get over to persons is that if this is something that you are thinking about having done or doing, that you go through the proper channels and seek medical attention. Don't just take it upon yourself to take these tablets, and you don't know what the outcome will be.
Yes. Right? And the issue is that you can take them, and then in the middle of the night, as most things happen in obstetrics and gynae, you get in trouble in the middle of the night, nobody is available, you're frightened, you gotta go to A&E, and then when people ask questions, then you're being put in a position. And all of that could have been necessarily be avoided. And in relation to provision of services, depending on the route, then the way how I've been trained, you get your medication and you stay in a particular room until the procedure has passed. It doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes you can get severe bleeding from it. And it's only, in terms of law of averages, it only takes one to get a bad outcome. So everybody's been lucky so far, but it only takes one.
And you had mentioned 2 in 1,000 for some of the complications, but who was to say that you are not
one? That you're not the two.
You're not one.
Everybody is happy. Like if I counsel a patient for his hysterectomy and stuff, I tell them the risk of a particular injury is 1 in 1,000, and everybody brushes it over. I say it's a very significant one if it happens, and I tell them, you know, a risk is different to everybody. What I might perceive as an okay risk to another person, it might be a very high risk. And then two, if it's 1 in 1,000 or 2, if it is you, everybody's happy until it's them. You understand? And when it's you, then you understand, or hopefully you would have understood what you were counseled against.
Yeah.
Or counseled for, not against.
Yes, counseled about, even though you can't put a boat at the end. But anyway,
yes,
we are discussing, and we're about to wrap up our discussion here with Dr. John Barker, obstetrician gynecologist, on causes of bleeding in pregnancy. From the show, we've learned that there are causes that can happen early in pregnancy, like ectopic pregnancy, a pregnancy in the wrong place, can be miscarriages. And thanks to the caller, we've discussed discuss some of the possible causes of miscarriage, and that in and of itself is an entire show. Causes of miscarriages in pregnancy. And we discuss the obstetric causes, like those which occur later on in pregnancy, such as placenta, meaning that the placenta is lying low in the uterus, or placental abruption, where the placenta is coming off of the wall of the uterus, and it can either be hidden, meaning that you don't see it, or what's the opposite of the hidden one?
Reveal. Yes. Yeah, concede or reveal.
Yes. Yes, Renee, the opposite of hidden is revealed. And what we wanted to do in the last portion of our discussion was to highlight the trend of persons taking terminations of pregnancies into their own hands, and to point out to persons that this is a very unsafe practice. We're not trying to tell you what to do with your body. What we're trying to prevent is some very serious complications. And sometimes when you get torrential bleeding, the only thing that you can do to save the life of that lady is to remove her uterus in some cases. And then there isn't the possibility of another pregnancy thereafter. So it comes with some very serious complications. So as we wind down, John, what are those things that you want persons to take? What should persons do in terms of antenatal care, in terms of on during pregnancy?
All right, so in terms of antenatal care, ideally, it should, before you get pregnant, it should be planned, but I know in flavor pregnancies are unplanned, but essentially any medical conditions to try and get started out before you're pregnant, especially if you got diabetes or any on control, to try and control them. When you become pregnant, and at least for the general population, you need an early viability scan just to make sure everything is fine. I mean, the ones that bleed and stuff, they will come to medical attention. But the ones who don't have any issues, they will need a viability scan just to make sure everything is fine. And then they get their bleeding scan, and then they get your anatomy scan. So those are the three important scans that you get. And in relation to antenatal care, you make sure you take your vitamins, make sure you eat properly, because it's not you, but the baby takes whatever it needs from the mother. So even if you don't eat good, the baby can still flourish, yeah? But the baby can take what they got to take from you. So you got to make sure that you take care of yourself. If any issues arise in the pregnancy, then essentially you might need more ultrasounds, like if you got a small baby or anything like that. And then hopefully once you get the proper antenatal care, and you must get the essential antenatal care, even if you have 4 or 5 babies. Yes, you're a professional in terms of your children and stuff, but you cannot beat medical intervention to make sure everything is safe. Because if you had previous pregnancies before and you're healthy, you're at high risk for anemia, which is a low blood count. And the problem is if you get a bleed and you're anemic, you don't cope as well as a younger person with a higher blood count.
Go ahead, Dr. Barker. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And in relation to miscarriages and stuff, you make sure that you present early, because the earlier you present, the quicker we can get the problem sorted in relation to if you come in to bleeding and stuff, you seek appropriate attention. If you need specialist attention, you call the appropriate specialist. Or, as I was saying, in relation to gynecological emergencies, we run a gynecological emergency unit. But in relation to going to a doctor, the first port of call is to go to a doctor to get sorted, because at the end of the day, it's about you, it's about your health, it's about your safety, and it's about your patient journey.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Barker, for your wealth of knowledge. Thank you for taking the time out to share with us.
No problem.
If you have any questions at all, you can call into the studio and speak to Gregston, or send a WhatsApp and he'll forward the information to us. And you can find Dr. Barker in the telephone directory and on the Yellow Pages. And you can also find me online. So, Gregston?
Yes, please.
Greg Effect in full effect.
Would you believe it? There's somebody calling right at the death of the show. You want to take that call, Doc?
Well, let's take it quickly.
All right. Go right ahead, please. Good evening.
I'm sorry, I have the wrong number.
Oh, you have the wrong number. All right, no problem. Have a good evening nonetheless. They have the wrong number, Doc. You were saying?
Well, I was just saying my goodbyes. It's good to hear you, and thanks to technology, it's good to see you as well.
All righty.
Continue to take care of yourself, and we'll be back, hopefully, next week, Lord willing, with another show.
God's willing. God's willing, yes, indeed. So thank you kindly, Dr. Renee Boyce, the host of the program Better Health Radio Show. And her guest today was Dr. John Barker. Like she said, no stranger to the show. He's been here several times, and we always appreciate his input on the show. Thank you all. All right.
Thanks. All right, have a good day.
Thank you, sir. And Dr. Boyce, likewise to you. Well, take care of yourself.
Take care. Bye-bye.